are asked to come here by us, by our government. And guess what? Guess who the minister was that toured the Caribbean islands, asking the people to come here to work in our transport industry, to become bus drivers, above all, to work in our National Health Service, to become the staff who would become familiar over the next half century to work here in the National Health Service. But the health minister at the time, one J. Enoch Powell. So these people didn't wake up one day and say, let's catch the Windrush. Let's catch the Windrush to Blighty, to the mother country. They were asked to come to the mother country, asked by us, having been in the Caribbean in the first place, because we took them there by force of arms as slaves. You would have thought that anyone who had a heart would regard our obligation to these people as more than absolute. One would have thought that anyone who had a heart or a scintilla of moral decency within them would consider that we owed these people justice, if not reparation, for their loss. They came here. Many of them came here. They added hugely to the gaiety of public life in Britain. Some of our most famous footballers, some of our most famous musicians, some of our famous politicians, some of our most famous doctors, some of our most famous cultural and creative people are the sons and daughters of that Windrush generation. And yet, far from feeling a moral obligation to them, far from seeking to make reparation to them, it turned out that successive British governments had been silently deporting them because they lacked paperwork. They lacked paperwork they had never been told they needed in the first place. Such a scandal was it that the British Home Secretary Amber Rudd, who I see wants her job back, had to resign as Home Secretary over the head of it.
Tall towers where falcons build their nests. Silver-winged they fly. They know the call of freedom in their breasts. Saw black hair against the sky. We twisted rocks.
Sunsets asked for more.
someone touched the bowl. He played a reed, it seemed so grand and gay. Stood on Dingle Beach and cast in wild foam, found Atlantic bar.
Kids, well. He looked in the eyes, the Yankees turned and he teach you Bill. Son, Yankees line going to both on a jet with the U.S. red, white, and blue. Took them all the way to an African puppet dictator. While the nation news rags announced that I see that traitor. Congress, charter, jet, a few there. Congressional Black Caucus in there. And did the puppet release the ones that he held there? The general was told to let them fly to exile. So they flew to Jamaica, and they were still there for a while. It was a kidnapping coup by those who murder and plunder. They hide behind lies and they terrorize everyone under. Us too, that's what Boston's about, terrorizing you. They silence with violence the voices of conscience and just you. And the kidnapping coup is covered up in a corporate view.
April 27, 2013.
This is the cool people Arlie that post Francis blogs Center. And vlogs and that kind of stuff on the internet.
Recently had an election, and of course the Clintons want you to believe that they love the people of Haiti. Raoul Peck, who did the Lumumba movie, chronicled where they threatened to kidnap René Préval because he wouldn't fix the election. election in the way that Bill and Hillary wanted the outcome to be. And therefore, the Haitian people under occupation were denied their legitimate rights again to elect their president. And Marcel Martelly, who is the president today, is not because the Haitian people want him to be their president, but because Bill and Hillary Clinton dictated it to the Electoral Commission that he be their president. With $1 billion having been donated to the people of Haiti, and the Haitian government got less than 1%. And don't leave that yet, because listen to the lyrics of this wonderful song.
Tell the story of the American intervention in Haiti. There's a couple of things in here that I should tell you about. Frap, in French it means to hit, and the frap was the death squads that were used by the Haitian elite against the Haitian people. Mildred is the wife of Aristide. He was in exile in Africa, and he wrote this book, Haiti, Haiti. I actually got it signed by Mildred. She'll be mentioned in the song, but she was kidnapped too. TT is a term you might not be familiar with. For Haitians, it's an affectionate term for Aristide. I have all these songs for free. I give them all away. They're at SoundCloud, and I have videos at Troubadour. At SoundCloud is Broadside Valley here, and on YouTube it's Troubadour. So I'll stop by and see how I put visuals to these songs too. I also have a brand new local site. It's called Hear It Local, and you can book us for a house concert. So I have.
Probably couldn't get that, but it said hearitlocal.com/number!SF/artist? Well, never mind. Hear It Local with the H, the I, and the L capitalized. That would probably find it. Okay. Back to some other horror. Because we just heard that on the track that I like.
They're gold, you know.
Edited out that. Now, I'm completely forgetting.
Go first.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I'll just hit pause until I get up to the part about the Clinton Foundation in Haiti.
But as you point out, while that is happening, while they are defaming those figures, there's a very clear intent on the part of the managers of Wikipedia to prop up other figures such as Hillary Clinton.
Yes, she was the beneficiary of probably the most obvious Wikipedia PR campaign that was coming straight from the top. I mean, they hired the Clinton Foundation's PR firm, the Manassian Group.
Wikipedia did?
Yeah, Wikimedia, the nonprofit arm of.
Which is about revenues of what
it's, is? Yeah, they make $75 million. I think was the last year revenue, and
that's all donations.
Donations, yeah. It used to be donations from users. Now it's donations from users and large corporations and governments, like the government of Kazakhstan, and you know they just they'll take money from anybody.
Right. Well, and they get you pay the money and
yep, you get
it
the coverage.
You
get the coverage. It's no surprise if you look at the list of companies that have donated to Wikipedia. They have pretty nice pages, and you're not going to find any Philip Cross up there mucking their material up. But yeah, they definitely.
So talk about Clinton, because the difference between the Wikipedia page for Donald Trump and the difference between the Wikipedia page for Hillary Clinton.
The Clinton page is just completely sanitized. I mean, if you look at the Trump page, I mean, there will be all sorts of unsighted or unsourced, rather, allegations. Oh, he said something racist about this, and there's something blah, blah, blah about this, and there's the huge, there's entire pages devoted just to the Russiagate conspiracy. Whereas Hillary Clinton, the page is so sanitized. For one thing, it's much shorter.
But you write in here, you can't even, as an outsider, you can't. Make any changes
it's
that
protected.
Page.
I mean, I don't know to what degree it is protected because there are varying levels. I would imagine her page is one of the most because otherwise people would be coming in there and trying to set the record straight. I mean, there was definitely a user who systematically prevented any sort of edits about the Clinton Foundation's business in Haiti, making off with all that money. None of that was allowed to make it in there during election season. I would imagine
the
it's still not allowed.
The Podesta emails.
Yeah, nothing makes it in there.
Hey, that, well,
that this was going to be, they had become the excuse, they said, for the RPF to Paul Kagame, which was at that time in, contesting for power. He had an army, but it was at peace. They had the Arusha Accord, and they were supposed to have a new government formed in which the RPF would participate. However, they took the opportunity to assassinate Habyarimana. And Claude makes it out as though they use the phrase, it was an excuse to intervene because of the subsequent violence, because violence broke out in Rwanda among, with intercommunal violence amongst people. And so they, Claude says that they, that's why they did it. No, in my opinion, that isn't why they did it. They did it in order to decapitate the government of Rwanda. They murdered the president and major important people in his staff, but they meant they murdered the head of the Rwandan army, General Savimana. So you get the president and you get the head of the army. And then on April the 7th and 8th, you have the help of General Dallaire and others who said to the surviving members of the government, we don't recognize you. We don't think you... This matter has to be sorted out. So you're a legitimate government on April 6, 1994. On the morning of the 7th and the following days, 8, 9, 10, you're told, we're not formally recognizing you. Well, I mean, you want to talk about a way to create havoc? That was done, and that was the UN, that was UNAMIR did that, and that was Kofi Annan, and that was all the way back up the line. They set the stage so that the government side, the army, lost its legitimacy when their head of their army and their president was killed. As for the business about the missile, I think it's a fool's errand in a way. I know Christopher Black, a lawyer, we've had him on the show, has done excellent work on this. And I know he has pointed out, and it's wise to underline it, is that this is not news. This is not news about the missiles coming from Uganda. That's known. This has never been a dispute. And this is an article. And I, by the way, I appreciate Judy Reaver's work. Terrific work. Her book is, I hope everybody gets a copy of the book, In Praise of Blood, The Crimes of the Rwandan Patriotic Front. That phrase, Praise of Blood, she means that Western powers were congratulating Kagame on using force and causing bloodshed in praise of blood caused by him. But by the way, it wasn't him. He knew he had the blessing of U.S. and Britain and France.
DJ, and Clinton, of course, because I'm segueing from Haiti and back to bad news.
A politician who wants to end it, and here it is, Tulsi Gabbard.
You've called for the U.S. to suspend its involvement and support of this Saudi-led war in Yemen, where thousands, if not millions, of individuals, innocent people, have been killed or are under the threat of starvation right now. Beyond that, what actions do you want the Trump administration to take in the wake of Khashoggi's death?
Well, first of all, we need to end this Saudi-U.S. Alliance, period. We need to stop selling them these precision-guided missiles.
Very good. Anyway, I have no argument so far. Let me go back, because this is going to be cub snuffing coup, because, well, I mean, before Khashoggi was a reporter, he was, like, carrying a RPG with a rocket launcher with Osama bin Laden in Afghanistan. Anyway, the contra-revolutionarios. But, well, before Vic was carrying the camera, he was behind the guitar, and as the broadside balladeer is the truth, troubadour. So let me jump back to last week when I always did it better to No More and No Lies, Vic.
Part where Vic is sitting next to me September 15th saying they've got a good online, but I want my little remark, which we'll get to, but...
Bye. Can you hear me back on the guitar?
No. Is that going to be on my right? Hey, our computer just went down, our DJ computer. I'm going to go straight back there and make an audio tape of this and stand the recording.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's true. But it wouldn't have mic on.
It wouldn't have what?
Oh, my hat off.
Yeah. Maybe just want to go with that.
For any other of these... You would have an MP3 player that would kind of have, I do continuously.
You know, last time I came, you know, August 18th, I came here, and I defied them.
Oh, you were the guy behind the camera.
And I did six videotapes of one.
Yeah.
Two doors.
And the last couple had the security goon.
Yeah. That's all that good.
Oh, yeah.
That was put up embedded at the No Lies Radio.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then I go to the Bond section. Bond was made at me.
You did what?
The first Bond was made at me for putting
her up. Oh.
On YouTube. She called me up and she said, "You're taking my situation into a circus."
Well.
And I said, "Who put that idea in your head?"
You can understand how there would be more friction out of the whole shebang. And I don't know.
Anyway, she changed her mind and said, "Go ahead and put it up."
Well, she looked very chagrined when I said, "You want to distance yourself from the comments I made on my personal mouse recorder?" Hunter Thompson said, you know, Rotten and Slimeball have no place in serious political debate. But, of course, he had to use them describing Nixon in his obituary. Well, I mean, there's a time and a place for certain things. Let's back off of all that and let her be, if you read that goddamn piece that the MFB bosses put out, they convict themselves. Because what the Nazi pig is saying is the ICRJ and Israel are guilty of crimes.
Yeah, and that might be International Red Cross, ICRC, but the Nazi I'm referring to is the guy who says only 300,000 died in the death camps, and he's one of the three, and he's roundly disputed by the other two on that panel that Quincy McCoy was pointing to. And the bosses I'm referring to are like the secret program council that is the self-appointed manager acting beyond his authority. In the Twitch show that captured, what basically happens is when the proposal to put Guns and Butter back on the air, and he wants a roll call. He wants the people named, you know, by name and not anonymously. And Tom Voorhees, I think, is putting the proposal. And the chair says, "Well, we're going to do a roll call vote first." And I think it went no. And then she says the motion... fail. First she says passes, then she says fails, but she didn't even put it up to vote. She just said, if the people on the board wanted to vote anonymously, she just took it upon herself to vote for everybody. And anyway, that's kind of the blah, blah, blah. Back to...
If you're going to report, why don't you get a copy of the paper?
Okay, I will. Hi, thanks.
Whoops, end of file. Let me hit pause.
Or.
Anyway, that was Vix Doe, who just died, and
he was going to do a... Oh, he was working on the War and Law League with the War and Law League, and I just wanted to coin hit the wall, we stick to you, Black Cube, what you up to? No relation to Dirty Dillon, but shut up.
These weapons and these arms that they are using to kill civilians in places like Yemen. We need to end our U.S. military support in Yemen. And this is something that I want to talk about a little bit because there hasn't been much focus placed on what the United States' role has been in partnering with Saudi Arabia in Yemen, something that began in 2015 under the Obama administration, continuing now through the Trump administration, where our U.S. military are refueling Saudi bomber planes. They are dropping U.S.-made bombs that we have supplied to them. We are providing them with intelligence and targeting support, as has been reported by this administration, and therefore very complicit in this genocidal war that Saudi Arabia is waging in Yemen. As you said, it is causing millions of Yemeni people to starve and suffer, what to speak of the innocent civilians and children to the tune of tens of thousands who have been killed because of this war. This must end now. We have legislation introduced within Congress. We are trying to push and force a vote on this to end that support for Saudi Arabia in this war in Yemen now.
And my prediction is that, first of all, thank you, Tulsi Gabbard, for doing that. That's fantastic. Her, Rokana. And isn't it amazing that Rokana and her don't take corporate money? And they're able to tell the truth about what's happening with Saudi Arabia and Yemen. Isn't that amazing? Yeah. That is amazing. By the way, the DNC just decided to start taking fossil fuel money again, just so you know, and all these wars are over fossil fuel. So anyway, not a big deal, but if you don't vote blue, no matter who, you're a bad person.
I mean, how do we put pressure on Bernie to answer to us?
It's the Real News Network, and I'm Greg Wilper, joining you from Baltimore. On Tuesday, Aram Rostin of BuzzFeed revealed that the United Arab Emirates, UAE, hired an American mercenary company called Spare Operations Group to assassinate individuals in Yemen, and that they also attempted to plant a bomb at the headquarters of the Al-Isla Party. In this operation, the UAE is cooperating with Saudi Arabia in its war against the Houthi ethnic group that is governing Yemen. It is very interesting to note that the UAE did not contact this company directly, but it was Mohammed Dahlan, a Palestinian from Gaza, who is a former senior member of the Fatah Party, who reached out to the Spare Operations Group. And so, why was the Spare Operations Group chosen out of dozens of similar mercenary companies? Spare Operations Group was founded by Abraham Golan, a former Israeli military officer and well-known businessman in the private military and security business. Already in February, the Yemeni transportation minister, Saleh al-Gabwani, warned that the UAE intervenes in Yemen by creating small armies and fragmenting the territory and its population.
The situation is very bad in all liberated areas, particularly those in the south where there are tribal armies established and supported by the United Arab Emirates. There are also provincial armies and there are gangs. Even Al-Qaeda is spreading there in large parts of the governorates. Al-Qaeda has never been as present as it is right now.
Joining me now to discuss the role of the U.S. mercenaries in the Yemen war is Anthony Lowenstein. He is an independent journalist and author of Disaster Capitalism, Making a Killing Out of Catastrophe. Thanks for joining us again, Anthony.
Thanks for having me.
So what is the UAE trying to achieve in Yemen? Why do they need foreign mercenaries to fight for them in Yemen and conduct assassinations?
The UAE's army for many years, in fact, has been made up with a lot of mercenary figures and outsiders. So the UAE's army itself is often not made up of locals, so to speak, but made up of foreigners. This has been the case for a long time. And it's got a lot stronger in the last year since they've been fighting in Yemen. I mean, essentially, why did they hire this particular company? I don't think we know is the short answer. But I think what we do know is why these kinds of companies are being hired is because, A, they're seen as being effective. Effective meaning that they are able to assassinate or kill or capture so-called enemies of the UAE or the US for that matter. And secondly, the Israeli connection here is key because Israel has become expert at so-called targeted assassinations long before 9/11, and in fact many other countries, the US, the UAE and others, get inspiration from Israel and Israeli experience in killing so-called enemies. And that's, I think, partly why this kind of company may well have been hired. But the truth is that, legally speaking, this is still a very, very murky area. And in fact, since 9/11, since the huge explosion in private military contractors, there have been very, very few cases of Western military contractors, many of whom, of course, used to be in the US Army or British Army or Australian Army or armies from South or Latin America, actually being prosecuted for crimes, for war crimes. It's very, very rare. That's partly because the US has no real interest in doing so, mainly because these individuals have been fighting what the US regards as their legitimate wars, whether it's Afghanistan, Iraq, Yemen, or elsewhere. So he obviously feels he has protection in speaking openly, but as I said, it's very rare that someone is so brazen in speaking so openly about what they did. And we should also note that the individual this organization was trying to murder, assassinate, survived. The person apparently is still alive. He still has a presence in Yemen. And the organization that he belongs to is also very well regarded by some in Yemen and outside. So you could argue on the one hand this was a botched operation, but almost history would suggest, and we see this with, for example, the work in the past of Eric Prince, who used to run Blackwater, that failure is rarely an impediment to more contracts. In other words, the fact that this story is now out in BuzzFeed, and the fact that this operation itself was not successful in Yemen does not necessarily mean that this guy won't get more contracts, which might be counterintuitive. That's, history would suggest that's the case.
Hmm. Sounds like it's good advertising, perhaps.
But, in a way.
So explain to us the connection now between Mohamed Dahlan, who originally orchestrated the Spear Group's involvement in, and what is his connection to the UAE? He is not from the UAE after all. And how did he become their agent in recruiting mercenaries?
This is a really interesting case. Like Dahlan's role used to be very key in the Palestinian territories. He was born in Gaza. He was very influential with Fatah, which is one of the main political parties here in Palestine. He had a long-standing hatred of Hamas, which is often Fatah's enemy. And about 10 or so years ago, about 12 years ago now, there was a civil war of sorts, a very short-term civil war between Fatah and Hamas. Hamas won, and Dahlan essentially was kicked out. And he ended up becoming a very kind of murky, almost kind of go-to hitman for the UAE. He's been living there for over a decade. And there's been a range of examples of him reaching out to US corporations and others to try to do the dirty work, so to speak, of what the UAE wants to do.
That was the oil embargo. Speaking of tearing it apart, if you take a VW, tear everything off, and then put on a 3.5-foot high fiberglass body. You call it a Formula V. You can drive from Klamath Falls to Sacramento on 7 gallons of gas. That's 350 miles, like
50 miles a gallon. So that was 1973. I could do it because I could drive 45 because all the gas stations were closed. And that was the year that Gaddafi was the last to drop the oil embargo. First to put Tim Osman on the wanted list. That's Osama bin Laden's cover name. Oh, and 1973 is the name of the UN resolution that, that bombed Libya back into the poorest country in Latin America. Africa, because we did it to Latin America.
Wherever I go, I see you people.
Interesting, because they said it was because he was outspoken with regards to the goings on in Catalonia, in Spain.
And leave us not forget that that's where Spain just, and the European Union said, fuck all you voters, you know, you think this is a democracy, bullshit. This is a dictatorship of the shepherd class. Anyway, Catalonia, I'm just going to run off the rails while I keep talking, so let me just go back to Gordon Dimmick talking about Ecuador giving Julian Assange his internet access back, and when it was cut off, Spain was in the middle of throttling democracy, and the EU was going along with it, so of course they don't want any WikiLeaks.
Supporters of WikiLeaks and its founder, Julian Assange, briefly celebrated last week when Ecuador announced that it would restore Assange's internet access at its London embassy, where he has taken political asylum since August 2012. The celebration ended, however, when Ecuador announced a long list of draconian and Orwellian conditions. They would restore his freedom of information and freedom of expression, they said, so long as he didn't say anything to interfere in the affairs of another country. I spoke to Susie Dawson, the coordinator of the Unity for J campaign for Assange's freedom, during yesterday's WikiBees online activist video conference.
I'd like an update on whether or not Julian will sign off on these draconian conditions that were presented.
He will not. So that's something that I've confirmed, is that he has not and will not sign any agreement to curtail his freedom of expression in any way, shape, or form. That is 100% confirmed.
I guess this means that because he's not going to sign the draconian conditions, he won't be reconnected. Will he have any more access, phone visitors? Will they impose these newly draconian conditions about visitors that were in the conditions, since they're the ones who can make decisions about that?
What it looks like is happening is that Ecuador are supplying an agreement for him to sign. They're supplying a notice, like, we are notifying you that this is the new regime. So it's like they're notifying him that these are the rules, right? But then they are trying to sell that as an agreement in public. They're trying to suggest in public and to the media that Julian has agreed to these terms to somehow infer some kind of responsibility on his part.
Baltasar Garzón, the former Spanish lawyer and judge most famous for issuing an international arrest warrant for former Chilean dictator General Augusto Pinochet, heads Assange's legal team. This week, Garzón flew to Ecuador's capital, Quito, where he spoke to the press and announced that Assange is suing Ecuador and the country's foreign minister for violating his human rights according to international law and his rights as an Ecuadorian citizen according to Ecuador's constitution. Ecuador granted Assange citizenship in December 2017. More information about Julian Assange and his case can be found at unity4j.com. That's unity4j.com. On October 4, Pacifica Radio's National Board passed a resolution in support of WikiLeaks and Assange. In Berkeley, for Pacifica, KPFA Radio, I'm Ann Garrison.
March is occurring 51 years after another anti-war march that attempted to levitate the Pentagon. Several thousand people are expected at tomorrow's event. KPFA spoke with anti-war activist and organizer Cindy Sheehan. We asked her what the problem with the Pentagon was.
The U.S. has almost 1,000 bases in about 150 countries of the world. It's got 6 or 8 active bombing wars going on, and that's including helping Saudi Arabia in its genocide of Yemen and Israel in its genocide of Palestine. And then the Pentagon takes 60% of every tax dollar while we're suffering here in the United States due to lack of jobs, housing, education, quality, free health care. So we want to reverse those trends. We think a peaceful world is also a prosperous world for everybody.
And what's the significance of the fact that this is a women's march or a women-led march?
Well, first of all, the women's march in the beginning of the year didn't address the war or imperialism question, and we seek to rectify that. And also, the many anti-war movements have tried to make a difference, haven't made a difference. So we think it's about time that we get some women as leaders. And we have so many wonderful men and binary people that are joining us. But the leadership of this march is women, and we want to keep that energy at the forefront because the imperial energy is so male-oriented. So we have to change that paradigm.
Have you attracted support from the women who organized and participated in that other women's march you referred
to? No, we haven't, because we are not a get-out-the-vote for the Democrat Party. And in fact, many of them said we shouldn't hold our march on October 21st because we might harm the chances of the Democrats, which tells us a lot, that the Democrats are just as much a war party as the Republicans.
That's anti-war activist Cindy Sheehan. For more information, you can go to marchonpentagon.com.
All right, everybody. So look up to your left. Boom. Why are we here? Why are we marching on the Pentagon? We're not marching on the Pentagon because we believe that the war machine and the military industrial complex is in charge. And we're here to say no. Women are in charge.
Right.
And our allies, women and our allies who are out here supporting us, are in charge. Now, this is a women's march on the Pentagon with our allies here with us. Can we let the women go first as we get to the rally?
Yes. The Pentagon, lift up the Pentagon, never let it come down again. Lift up the Pentagon, lift up the Pentagon, lift it into the sky and then lift up the Pentagon, lift up the Pentagon, never let it come down again. Lift up the Pentagon, lift up the Pentagon, lift it into the sky and then lift up the Pentagon, we can do it, never let it come down again. Lift it into the stars, throw it towards Mars, that's a good place for it. Hey, what do you know? A UFO has finally abducted it. Lift up the Pentagon, lift up the Pentagon, lift it into the sky, and then lift up the Pentagon, lift up the Pentagon, never let it come down again. Throw it towards the sun, show everyone that it's very small. Send it it into the light, that violent might will come to nothing at all. Lift up the Pentagon, lift up the Pentagon, lift it into the sky, and then lift up the Pentagon, lift up the Pentagon, never let it come down again. Throw it into a big black hole, pieces are its goal. Let it get lost in space, pick powers at war, that's what we're for. Peace will embrace this place. Pick up the Pentagon, pick up the Pentagon, pick it into the sky, and then lift up the Pentagon, lift up the Pentagon, never let it come down again. Lift up the Pentagon, lift up the Pentagon, lift it into the sky, and then lift up the Pentagon, lift up the Pentagon, never let it come down again.
Bonnie Caracciolo.
Woo!
I'm kind of an unknown.
No.
I'm Cindy's number two.
Woo!
In a good way.
I know you.
So I'm going to give you a little history of the Women's March on the Pentagon. It kind of started out as a joke between Ann Garrison, who is a journalist, and Cindy, who were kind of wondering why the women's marches that occurred directly after the election of Donald Trump didn't talk about war. There was never a discussion about war. We didn't see that. And some people have told me there were individual peace actions in different cities. But anyway, the media didn't give it any attention, so we didn't know about it. So they decided, they were kind of joking, and they said, hey, why don't we do a march? Yeah, why don't we do a march on the Pentagon? That doesn't sound so crazy, does it? So, we're like, yeah, why not? I mean, as long as the First Amendment is still intact, I mean, it might be in shreds, but it's still intact, okay? So, we decided, well, you know, I was kind of watching on the sidelines, and I said, wow, wouldn't that be a great idea? So I woke up the next morning to find that Cindy had made me the co-host of the Women's March on the Pentagon 2018 Facebook page. Go figure, my finest moment. So I thought, oh great, I'm a big shot on Facebook, wow. So one thing led to another, and we took it seriously. And we still take it seriously, and it grew and grew and grew, just like a little acorn into a giant oak tree. Well, it might be a sapling right now, but we're pretty confident it's going to grow into a full-size oak. So, with your help. So, today is just the beginning. This isn't just a march, you know, then we're going to roll up our backpacks and go to our various homes and forget about it. This is the beginning of a movement. We're hoping to bring all of you people and all the people you know and all the people that don't even know about us yet together to really start moving towards a peaceful world. It's going to only take a couple of years, Cindy said. I don't know. I'm like, are you sure? I've been doing this for like 50 years. She said, no, it's going to happen, Bonnie. It'll just be a couple of years. You just hang in there. So anyway, so I did, and so here we are. There are so many people to thank. All of you are here. Every single person that is about to speak or perform has donated their time and their travel. We started out with zero money back in June.
Thank you.
have one more. Okay, we just sang a song called Yo Sipsina, which means I am a child of God. Sorry that my voice sounds like crap. Tzilopochtli Tezcalipoca Quetzalcoatonatiu. Huitzilopochtli Tezcalipoca Quetzalcoatonatiu.